a visit coming as well, of course, with Crafty, Jeff Franklin. But Tom Law is going to pop in next. Get a couple of opinions, I think, maybe from Tom. We'll watching for the changes on today's card. All right. And there it is. A little past the bottom of the hour, about 10 minutes past the bottom. And when we come back, Tom Law. Second half at the races. SiriusXM back after this.
If you're racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Created specifically for horse racing. Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions. And offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
The PA Horse Breeders Association presents the new and improved Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Six $100,000 stakes for PA sired, PA bred Zoot Parts. Two 6-furlong contests on PA Derby Day. The 2-year-olds then go 7 furlongs on December 30th. Here's the big change. The last two races are in August 2025 for 3-year-olds. Then $50,000 in breeder bonuses go to the top 3 horses in the series. For more, go to PABred.com.
This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. Second half, about, so just about 15 in. Tom Law is going to join us, and I'm hoping that we can get a couple of opinions in from Tom. I'm just in the process, actually, of retweeting. Capital OTB just put out the DePaula play of the day, and I want to talk about it I don't think they've got a, let me check if they've got a live paper today or if it was yesterday. Anyway, let me get Tom in here and we'll see what he's got for us. All right. There we go. It's the seventh race is the spot, and it's a starter allowance, and it's tough. I mean, this is it's a deep group. I play this. I approach this a little differently. You know, as a play of the day, my inclination, you know, to me, and good morning, Tom Law.
Morning.
I'm just talking about my the thing I do with Capital OTB these last 5 or 6 years, the DePaula play of the day, where Capital OTB players get, yeah, there's a group of them that were selected, I think 20 of them, and Kevin Cox and I alternate picking races, and they bet them 50 to win, 30 to place, 20 to show, and yeah. then the group of account holders, they split whatever we make at the end of the year. And you know, my approach is more to find a price horse. This is one of those interesting debates where people talk about what constitutes a best bet. Is a best bet the horse most likely to win on the day, or is a best bet, by my way of thinking, a horse with the best chance at an advantageous price? And so yeah. that's my thinking.
I'm with you. I do the same.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm giving horses out, like, I'm not going to give out, a horse that's, odds on in a 4-horse field or 5-horse field. I mean, to people that are going to the races, they want to have a little fun. You know, I'll give them that horse and say, this horse is probably the most likely winner, but the horse I really like today is X. And go from there.
Well, I'm angling toward the seventh race. Is there a hard paper today, or is it strictly online?
Yeah, online today. This is horseracing.com. Get our picks. Thankfully, had a decent day yesterday, and Jessica Paquette and I are in the black so far for the meet. We're doing we're keeping track of our ROI for the whole meet this year. Which is a crazy endeavor, I think. Not only because it feels like we would just make mistakes on it, but we'll hopefully stay afloat. But a quarter of the way in, and have a little bit of positive in the bankroll, so that's a good thing.
Well, that may be problematic for Chapazian, because he's a chalk eating weasel.
Yeah, so he's a few wins behind me, amazingly. And I will tell you this, having to do this now, I feel like has actually made me a little better, which I need to do if I'm going to beat him by wins, which seems to be the benchmark. But really, I just want to finish, if I can, try to finish in the black. But it's been not good for John so far. He's down. He came out of the blocks yesterday with 2 winners right away, and then didn't have anything the rest of the day, and ended up losing more money. So he's down about, I don't even know what he's down. He's down close to $47 he's down for the meet so far. And he's got 2 fewer wins than I do. I have 30 wins. He has 28. I'm up $4.40, which isn't going to buy you anything in Saratoga. But it's a lot better than being down $47.
Exactly.
Well,
I actually started the conversation this morning with a little bit of, some handicapping discussions, and so let's wander into this arena, and we'll get a couple of picks out for today. But Tom, what so far? I mean, we're 25% in. We've got 10 race days that are in the books, and is there? Yeah, I mean, in terms of a feel, because I've said all week already, the area that I'm struggling with a little bit, which surprises me, are the maidens, the juvenile maidens, which is traditionally an area where I've done fine.
Yeah.
But I'm really finding them you know, muddled and without a clear, you know, I rely on pedigree information and workout. And I'm finding myself, you know, sort of pulling out those sets of PPs and coming back to them last. And I'm not sure why, actually.
Nothing has jumped out in those races yet, in my opinion. I mean, Jeremiah had a nice winter bellicose the other day.
Yeah.
You know, who, thankfully, we had talked about her in the stable tour that we did in the paper the first Saturday of the meet. So I had a little bit of, you know, inside line on that horse. But, you know, and that doing that, you know, a lot of guys are, they like their horses. So it's kind of hard to, you know, nobody's like giving you the wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Occasionally they might, or you can kind of read between the lines of what they say if you've gotten to know them well enough. And even if you've gotten to know them in print, you know, I think some people that follow our paper follow that kind of stuff. But yeah, the 2-year-old races have been a little tricky, so far, especially the dirt ones. You know, trying to get a real good read on it, I would say, you know, I haven't gotten into Saturday's card yet, but I'm guessing there's probably a pretty good maiden on Saturday, and there'll be a good one on Sunday. You know, usually those big Saturdays, once we start getting towards the middle part of the meet, you know, you start seeing those horses that are going to run that are well meant, with their owners in town, with the sales coming up, and wanting to showcase those better babies. But it's been tricky in that regard. You know, a lot of the races have been. You know, I've gotten, you know, I'm a little over the, I think I may have said this already on your show before, but I'm a little over the 5.5 turf races, whether it's a New York bred maiden 40, which I was just handicapping for tomorrow. You know, even the stakes, I mean, I'm like, I'm fine with it, I guess, being a stake every now and again. The race today, the Caress, is a very good race. It's kind of a rerun of the Intercontinental, which they ran here at Belmont. I don't play them usually, just because I'm just like, okay, you know, maybe it's time to go get a lemonade or a IPA if I'm not working that day. You know, so I'm a little over those, but I have been, I guess, for years. But it's been good. I mean, I like the long turf races. You know, I did pretty well with Grand Motion's first time starter going to mile and a half the other day.
I brought that up. Yeah. I brought that up because it was very. It's an instructive arena. You know, a firster in a field of slow horses that are going, you know, an extended, that was a three-turner. And, you know, a firster, you say to yourself when you see a firster in that circumstance, well, you know, the horse is going to have to be, you know, fit, first and foremost. That's the biggest priority. And certainly, you know, certainly Graham in that setting,
is the guy that's going to have a fit.
You would think.
Yeah.
But at the same time, and, you know, you're saying it, it's a lot to ask, you know, for a horse to go whatever it was, a mile and 3/8 in a first start. But there again, it was one of those places where you can envision the comment may not need to be special, you know, to impact this immediately that setting.
And I give that advice to people all the time, especially if it's, say it's a 3-year-old nut maiden race, or even a maiden claiming race. A lot of times I'll just look at the PPs and I'll see a horse that has run 6-7 times. We know we're getting there, versus maybe a first time starter or a second time starter that might offer some value. I'll tend to look at those horses a lot more because I'm like, we know this horse is capable of losing because he's done it 6 or 7 times already. So that was the case in that race. You know, nobody, especially if you don't have a real strong opinion about somebody in the race, why not look at something that maybe is a little bit against the grain, so to speak, at a good price. You know, I'm not certainly willing to do it maybe at a short price, or I might be a little more hesitant at a short price, but You know, I did also rely a little bit on my colleague Joe Clancy's information for that race. He happened to be in Fairhill at the beginning of the meet, and spent some time with Graham and watched a bunch of horses train, and actually saw that filly train one day and liked her and mentioned her to me. He said, Graham has a 3-year-old filly I think that's going to run in a long race on the grass, a first-time starter that maybe we should look at. So tip of the cap to Mr. Joe Clancy, who does not have his picks in the paper. Maybe he should going forward. Give me that winner. So, but Joe has... Joe has plenty to do on a day-to-day basis, and I don't know if, yeah.
I'll give you.
We're rolling right along. But,
well, yeah. that was valuable. I'll give you another example from this comes from yesterday, actually, and
yep.
And these are older maidens. This is not what I was referring to more or less as the 2-year-old so far.
Yes,
but
in that
fourth race yesterday. There was and this also fits the same, the origins of this topic, because I was talking about today's $144,000 Del Mar Pick Six carryover. And there's a maiden race at the end of that sequence that has got four horses that are making their second career start, and then there's three horses, give or take, that have run races fast enough to win, break maidens typically, but they haven't. So you juxtapose the lightly raced horses and especially second time starters. The handicapping, quote unquote lesson I stressed earlier this morning was horses. The potential for horses' greatest improvement comes in their second start. Well, yesterday, you had a situation where you had state bred maiden 30s, and Jimmy Ryerson had a horse, 2J's Way, that was making the second career start, was going turf to dirt, shortening up a little bit, and had run at 12-1, had run a, just an okay debut, past, some tired horses, broke a little bit from inside and didn't really get away great, had a little bit of a tangled, legs underneath them. So 2J's Way was 15-1. And that number was skewed because of course, the 6-5 favorite Big Ego, had scratched. So the morning line prices, were a little, they weren't really instructive, but he knew he was going to be a decent price. Anyway, this was a horse you couldn't hold that first start against him, and I ended up picking 2J's Way after Big Ego scratched, because he was the one that had upside. Most everybody else was a suspect, and that had I don't want to embarrass any horses, but the proverbial scenario of a frog with the least warts. You want a horse that still has questions that they can answer, as opposed to the ones that have had multiple tries. We've got a horse, Shirzando, who's 0-23. He's made $150,000, and he's basically paid for himself. But he's a horse that's had all the chances, that a player, players are going to use him underneath when he runs, but you're not going to put him on top. This was an opportunity, and the horse ends up winning, and winning well, pays $1,260.
Yeah, big price, right? I mean, looking back at it, it's all easy now, right? I mean, but congrats to you for having this. You explained it. Perfectly, just the way that I would usually explain it to other people, especially when you have a horse maybe that you have a lot of them in here that were in the race that had failed at the same level. There weren't a lot of questions with them. You're kind of like, okay, I know their story. I mean, this is a horse that he ran on the grass first time out, kind of mid-pack with some trouble, like you said, switching to the dirt. You got to factor in a guy like Jim Ryerson. he'll win a few races up here this year, probably with a small stable, always does pretty well. You know, Dylan Davis is riding great. A lot of things to like about it. So that probably paid for your whole trip to Iowa.
Well, I didn't go to Iowa. I got sidetracked. I turned away the other night. I couldn't get there. I'm not in Iowa. I'm still home. I had to come home. Yeah. I couldn't get out. I could have gotten out. I could have gotten to Chicago. But then I wouldn't have gotten to Omaha until like 1:30 in the morning. The whole thing just sort of collapsed.
Yeah. Oh man. Bummer.
Yeah.
I was hoping to get an update on how things were going out there. I was sad to miss it.
Well, you should have listened to myself. You could have listened to the show.
Well, I was out at the, you know, been out working the backstretch and trying to.
Oh, that's you.
Going, you know? Yeah,
I get it. you're trying to find the next Grand Motion $15 winner. I understand.
Yeah. Or I could have. I guess I could just walk around my headphones in, like a lot of people do.
That's better. No, we had a nice conversation already this morning. I just had Pat Cummings. He's doing the CAW conversation, and John Moss joined us as well. From I said was the past the former executive director, but he still is the executive director. Not very much the active executive director.
Yeah. For sure. I'm going to sit in on some of their meetings later today, so nice. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, in addition to juggling everything here in Saratoga. It's been good, yeah.
Well,
I was sorry to miss it. I've never been there, so.
No, that'll have to. You and I will have to go out there. We'll go out there together at some point. How about that?
We should go to the Iowa Derby, Iowa Oaks, like weekend or something one time. We'll have team coverage. You can do the hosting, and I'll report from the paddock and winner circle. Yeah.
Well, then you have to call it by the right name, the Iowa Festival of Racing.
There we go, Cornhusker, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
We'll get out there and do that. That'd be fun.
Well, and as as an aside, that Derby with Henro and also, in fact, what weekend was that? Was that before July 4th? Right? It was the week. Was it the week before?
Yeah, I believe so. Yep.
The reason I'm making this aside, that's not in my, come on, that was Indiana. Indiana was right after, that was July 4th, that was July 4th week. I thought I had it here, but I do not. That's Belmont week. All right, Henro, I think, is headed toward the what did Hartman say to the West Virginia Derby?
Right, that's next weekend, same weekend as the Whitney, I believe, right?
That sounds right, and then the Husker winner, oh my goodness. I'm going to pull it up. That's why I was just going through my. I was going through my stack of Red Route One.
Oh yeah, Steve Smith's horse.
With a big effort, and I'm
nice consistent horse. Yeah.
Well, he's. I'm never right about him. I'm always.
No, I'm not either. No.
I just cannot get him right. But anyway, I'm curious where he's going to turn up next. And it seemed like a particularly good addition of the Iowa Festival of Racing.
For sure.
Let me get a couple of opinions from you today. What are you doing in the seventh? Where I just let's get a couple of plays in.
Oh, I heard you talk. Yeah. So who did you end up with on your in your play of the day in the seventh?
Beachwalker, the seventh. Beachwalker.
Oh, okay.
There just seems like there's too much speed in here. I mean, it's speed on speed on speed. You know, between.
Yeah, I mean, the. Yeah, you can take those two. Can I
switch to one back? Are you sure? Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, Tom.
Coordinating logistics at the Saratoga Special. We got all kinds of stuff going on.
I can hear that.
But this horse looks good from the outside. I mean, the 1 mile, the 7/8, good post, Carmouche, Gian Giulio, 10 strike. I mean, you're not going to get 12-1 with the 10 strike team. If they like the horse, those guys will be firing. I kind of like Gustavo Rodriguez's horse from the inside. Dots Dollar with Flavian. Ran for the 40, won for the 40 last time, going 6.5. Has a win here at Saratoga, going back, a couple years, but has won here. Horse bounced around claiming rights quite a bit here and there. But, I think the 7, the distance is good. The inside draw, maybe not so great, but and then the 6, I think, is going to be tough. The 6 is a favorite, print rack. This was a tough race. So again, I didn't have a real strong opinion. So I think when you don't have a real strong opinion, you kind of, if you're going to wager, go in the direction of Steve Bick and use Beachwalker for sure.
Well, both of the horses on the outside as well.
The 8,
Reddington.
Drop, kind of a drop, definitely a drop. I mean, coming from that open allowance, going a mile, shortening up, I like that. Horse has done pretty well at 7 in the past. Love to have Eddie getting the winner's circle. He deserves it. Kind of had a rough meet here last year. Good guy, works hard at it. I'm going to have to reevaluate my plays here.
Yeah. What are you doing?
I'm talking to the wrong people beforehand.
What are you doing in the caress?
I'm looking for what's her name? I'm looking for Roses for Deborah. Going to turn the tables maybe on Futures now. I know that they were 1-2 last time. I like the draw for Roses for Deborah again on the outside. But I really also like Christoph's other horse, Don't Look Back at All. For West Point, talk about consistent. Bouncing around, running Gulfstream, Aqueduct, Parks, just a real good turf sprinter with Joelle. She is speed, so she's going to have to contend with that and some of the other early speed in the race. But if she's a 10-1, I mean, she's definitely worth a good long look. If you don't think we're going to have a rerun of the Intercontinental again, but those horses' futures now, Roses for Deborah, very consistent as well. So, like I said earlier, it's a really good feature. And then Kelsey Danner's horse, Dance Macabre, I like her as well. She's speaking of consistent. She's never been outside the top 3, and she's got a lot of ones and twos next to her record.
Yeah, she does. She's tough. Now, Trombetta for me. And I for whatever reason, I find I always bet against Roses for Deborah. I have no idea why. I just have gotten into that habit. She can win, and he's certainly obviously going to use her.
Well, you've been right 5 of the 13 times. She's beaten you 8 times.
I thought Coffee Maker had a license to run well here for.
I mean, why not?
Wesley.
Right? I mean, speed. I mean, she's good. She's, anytime she's in against Phillies and Mares, she's loaded. Anytime she's in any race, she's got a chance. And Louis Saez, Wesley Ward. Wesley hadn't won a race yet, so maybe today's the day. He's got Chi-Town Lady going tomorrow. Pretty good allowance race on the card tomorrow.
The allowances have been really good. I'll give you a price that could hang on for a share, depending on how Dylan Davis rides the horse. But Kerry, down on the inside, got a tremendous push from the workout report. Is going to obviously save all the ground, has got speed to at least gain position. And the way Davis is riding, and at that price, if you're looking for somebody, other than the obvious, that could maybe boost the Tri or Super, Kerry from the inside for Joe Sharp. Sharp is very
huge
good
price,
with these.
Yeah, I would think. No matter what, she's going to be good value.
She's a good exotic candidate. Yeah. All right, give us one more before I send you back to the backstretch.
Oh, no, I'm in the office now. The training's over. It's 11 o'clock. Clancy just walked in, the real star of the show.
At least he came. At least he got up here to Saratoga. That was considerate.
He's here. He's rolling. Mucho Mamma Mia, race two, number 7.
Look at you with the 10-1 shot.
Jeremiah Engelhart. Pick the horse on top on our website. This is horseracing.com. So not just chasing the bankroll, but, horse ran for 16, non-2 life last time, dropping in for the 10 with IRAD. Jeremiah's the barn's rolling. He did not mention this horse in the stable tour, but they don't often mention the 10,000 claimers in there, unless that's all they have. It was the situation again where I had some questions maybe about the favorite, didn't like anyone else all that much, so not necessarily feel like I'm taking a stab. Did take the horse a long time to break her maiden, but 10-1, I'll take that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, that's the 7 in the second. You get IRAD, and you're going to get a price. I think I reached for a non-favorite as well. Run Devil, the pots with Gaffleon, the 4.
Yeah.
I was going to key off of Run Devil and another day gone by. Greg Sacco in town with the 3-1 rail horse brings Louis Rivera.
That's my
with
second
him.
Pick. Yeah. Another day gone by. Yeah.
Well, another visit with the Saratoga Special crew gone by. Tom Law, everybody. Yeah. Saratoga TL, and we'll have some national. Although you're not the president anymore, but we've got some interesting things to announce in a couple of weeks from the turf riders and broadcasters. And
for sure.
Tom, I will see you out there.
Yeah, sounds great. I think this was the most horse racing we've ever talked in our visit.
That's
so
good.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I wanted. I'd had a lot of business conversations, and we're going to close the morning out with business conversation with Jim Gagliano. So, we're going to talk Thoroughgraph right now with Crafty Jeff Franklin. So
sounds great.
All right. So,
thanks,
Tom Law, everybody, and the team behind the Saratoga Special. Let's talk to Jeff, and it's been 2 weeks, so we'll catch up with Crafty, and we're going to look both of the 10th race on both the coasts, Del Mar, and instead of the San Diego, it may have been, I don't know if it was not a mistake, but I ended up siding with the Bing Crosby, the Binglehoffer, and the Jim Dandy. We really haven't. We've referenced the Jim Dandy this week, but we really haven't talked, too many racing specifics about the gathering. But we will now. Jeff Franklin, good morning.
Steve, it's good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. It's been 2 weeks.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry about that.
No, not at all. Not at all. One of them was me.
God said travel, and so I did.
Exactly. There you go. You gotta go. I tried. I tried to get to Iowa, but didn't happen. Do we want to review anything, or do you want to catch us up on your early Saratoga and Del Mar impressions overall?
Well, Del Mar, I went down last Saturday for opening day. Was rather surprised to see two speed dominant surfaces. Del Mar is kind of notorious the first week to be needing a little bit of tightening up, etc. But from the first race on, you could see if you weren't in the top tier, it was stacked against you. It would be curious to see, if that plays beginning today as well. So that was Del Mar. Saratoga to me is going as gloriously as ever. I'm enjoying every day. I really don't have any like extraordinary comments about it, except the racing rocks, and there's bettable races every single day, several of them.
Agreed. What, out of curiosity, is there a one division or another that one arena that you find yourself gravitating toward as the most bettable spots?
Well, as somebody who swears by Thoroughgraph, I naturally tend towards very competitive races, particularly competitive turf races, because when you have horses coming from all around the country and settling down at Saratoga, particularly for their first start over the track, knowing how to separate the wheat from the chaff is essential. And you see two horses who both won an A other than by a length. They're coming in a two other than. One's coming from track A, another from track B. Who can make sense out of it? Well, the sheets do that for you. So those are the races I gravitate to time and time and time again, and I've gotten very lucky with them. So, I kind of laser focus on I heard your earlier comments on some of the baby races, and I found them to be highly problematic for some months now, and a lot of talk amongst my group of friends about why is that. I used to have tremendous success in the baby races, and
yeah.
I have a huge huge question mark all the time. Some people have pointed out the proliferation of workout reports. Some people have pointed out shipping. I've heard all sorts of nonsense. To me, it's just not as predictable for Jeff Franklin as some of the other races.
I'm glad to hear you say that because I having real trouble separating horses. I mean, and one of the things I mean, to put this in a Thoroughgraph reference, and you know what? Maybe next week. Well, it's Whitney week, so it'll be a great card. But maybe we'll do a bonus race with a two-year-old. We did this. I know we've done this. I think we did this earlier in the year. We'll do it again. I want to do that, and we're gonna show the sibling numbers and the dam and how you identify what might be a horse that's got sibling strength to be fast early. I can go through my method and we can bounce it off each other.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, we'll do that.
I look forward to that.
All right.
Good.
All right. Well, let's talk about the Travers prep. I suppose you could, even before we talk about Sierra Leone and Fierceness and the Preakness winner and the Invader from California, et cetera, as well as the top pair from Thistledown. What did you come away with from Dornick Mindframe round two?
Curious, but Mindframe is an extraordinarily talented horse who, much like Sierra Leone, just seems to need to get his racing shoes all together. And I pity the opposition when he does. In the meantime, Dornick just continues to improve. And all the way back from the Remsen days, where Dornick and Sierra Leone locked up, I've had my eye on both of them. And I've been disappointed through most of the Triple Crown season that Dornick didn't become the horse that I was hoping he would. Well, now he has. God bless him. And Mindframe, again, using a comparison with him and Sierra Leone, they're, God help the opposition when these guys get their act together. Those are two talented and really attractive racehorses.
Well, so we might we very well might put all of these horses together in the Travers Gate. Let's talk Jim Dandy before we do anything else. And obviously, it starts with the aforementioned Sierra Leone.
Well, and I have to tell you, I would be surprised if I bet this race, but I think this is one of the funnest races to observe maybe I've seen all year, and I'll tell you why. There's not one, not two, but three key storylines here that I'm just loving this. So I'm going to actually start with Fierceness, because as a Thoroughgraph player, the -3 and change that he ran some starts ago, not to mention the -1 that he ran when he won the Breeders' Cup, these are extraordinary indicators of talent. this is a running son of a gun. And so everybody says, well, he's temperamental, he's this and that. I don't think any of that. I think he's a classic alternator. He runs a good race, he bounces. He runs a good race, he bounces. And, you know, Steve, we talked about this. Charlie Whittingham taught me years ago. So when horses lay it all out there, sometimes it takes them longer to recover than folks estimate. Or you just need to let them go out there, run the quote-unquote bounce race, and that will set him up for the next race. Well, if that's the case with Fierceness, he's going to gallop here. And everybody who's listening to this show knows I love Sierra Leone. I had a huge future yep. book bet on him yep. in the Derby, right?
Yep.
And all he does is continue to have really interesting shenanigans while improving each and every start. So to me, you're talking about literally my top two most compelling racehorses that are running today. Here they are up against each other. And what makes the race even funner for me, getting back to when you and I did the Ohio Derby all those weeks ago, we chose Batten Down to win the race. And, you know, he was allowance winner from Churchill with numbers that didn't appear to be nearly good enough, but was in that pattern that said, yep, he's about to turn it around. And Bill Mott is just a wonderful trainer. So can he continue to improve two or three lengths more? Most people say no. Most people say off of a base of eights and then he runs a three, he'll pair up or he'll regress. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not quite that certain. So this race to me is one of the most watchable and quote unquote fun races literally of the year. I have no idea what to say outside of that. And again, to summarize my thoughts, in Fierceness in Sierra Leone, you have two monster racehorses who have their own peculiarities and quirks. I'd love to see which one's going to work it out on Saturday.
Well, looking at the race shape, which has got Pony Express, and for those that listened to Baffert on Monday, if you didn't, I would suggest you go back to the archives, not to hear him talk about Muth or Parenting, who are going to split up for the Travers and the Pennsylvania Derby, not for any of the other. He was more effusive about Pony Express than he was about his own horses. He said he was stunned when Pony Express ran away from his Canada Gate and Winterfell, who happened to run today in this pick six at Del Mar with the carryover sequence. I'm going to say three different times, Jeff, went back to gush about Pony Express, and that my ears perked up. And yes, he'd have to take another step forward, and maybe he ends up being, strictly a problem for Fierceness, because he, they're obviously going to coming out of the gate. The two of them are going to be 1-2, 2-1. I mean, the Gould's Gold isn't fast enough to go with either of them. I don't think Junior Alvarado necessarily is going to be aggressive with Batten Down. I don't think he wants to get into a early pace battle. But Pony Express could either ruin things for Fierceness, could grab control of this. I think he's a huge wild card now in this thing. When do you see, John Sadler had to endure for years, he had to endure the nonsense that he couldn't ship out of California and win. And he's effectively put that to bed.
Yeah, I would say.
To Betty by.
Right.
For him to put this horse on a plane, and yes, there's not, there's not an obvious dirt opportunity for Pony Express, locally at Del Mar. But anyway, Pony Express is a real wild card in here, suddenly.
I can't disagree, and I have the highest regard for John Sadler as a trainer. Over the years, particularly when I was an agent all those years, I'd have to look back, but I wouldn't be surprised if I won 35-40% for John, because he chose the horses. And I'll just say yes, right?
Yeah.
And I this man knows a horse. He's been doing it for, what, 40 years. And so for him to ship here with a lightly raced horse like this means something. He's right. No man's fool, that's for sure.
Well, he's going to have to improve by 4 or 5 lengths to mm-hmm. you know, to factor here. He did get down. As Jerry would say, he's done a lot of developing already. You know, took him 3 starts to break his maiden. He went from a 19.5 to an 11.5 to a 5.75, and he's going to have to, you know, get down to a probably a 1, 1.5 to hit the board here, because of course Fierceness at his best is going to run a negative number potentially, and that gets us to Sierra Leone, who's run 3 ones in a row, 1.5, 1.5, 1.25, seems poised to maybe take that breakthrough step, but. You know, he is a plotter to a great degree, and does feel like he's going to get plenty of pace. And we haven't really talked about Seize the Gray, who ran a 1.75 in the Preakness win, then reacted. You know, that was a clear breakthrough fig. Now he's had 7 weeks, and I'll be anxious to see what Mike Welsh and the crew have to say about his work, you know, into this. Mike joined us on Tuesday. And then there's Batten Down. There's a lot of people that are making Batten Down the now horse. He got down to a 3 and change in his impressive Ohio Derby win, parlaying off his Churchill Downs 1.25 Derby week graduation. So, you know, you've got 4 horses within a couple of points of each other, one and change, negative, actually less. You got Fierceness the fastest, and then Sierra Leone, Seize the Gray, Batten Down, and Gould's Gold and Pony Express would have to improve significantly. It's a fairly straightforward, but you know, the pace and the way the race unfolds will tell the story.
How good a race is it when, like, the 5th horse we mentioned happens to be the Preakness winner?
Yeah, exactly. right? Exactly.
It. Yeah.
The Bing Crosby. And, you know, to some degree, the Chosen Vron, the amazing Chosen Vron of Eric Cruel Jack and Sandricker Racing and Partners, comes in here and looking to score another graded stake win. And you go back, you know, he's had success at Del Mar and plenty of it, mostly the state bred variety. You got a very interesting invasion here by Adam Rice with Close the Game Sugar, which is a, you know, an aggressive move. But Chosen Vron, Happy Jack for Doug O'Neill, who's sort of been forgotten about in the sprint conversation. Baffert's got an upstart named Jackstown in here. You've got veterans like Straight No Chaser that have run races capable of winning this. It's a good addition of the Grade 1 Bingelhofer.
Yeah, I would say, and, you know, you started, in my view, correctly with the Chosen Vron. For folks who haven't watched this horse run, do yourself a favor and watch the race on Saturday. He has that, I mean, if you look up racehorse in the dictionary, there's this picture. He just loves to move at other horses and say, I'm the man, and take this. And it doesn't matter if he's sitting on the lead, if he's coming from 4th or 5th, he just moves at other horses. And, you know, as Jimmy Kilroe taught me years ago, that's the mark of a true racehorse. How does he move at the competition? And, of course, he's won the Bing Crosby. He loves the track. So as a racing fan, you have to kind of pull for him. The horse I'm fascinated with is Straight No Chaser, who ran that -3.5, had some time off, and then had a total toss race in his comeback. And so with that type of a number, always to pull out of his portfolio, you have to respect him. Sadly, we don't have morning lines yet. But he's somebody I think we really have to pay attention to. And as you stated, I mean, you summed up the race perfectly. We've got two running O'Neills. We've got a Baffert with no level, the chosen Braun. I saw the Rice horse. I tend not to, I think he's going to be up against it. Delmar's a tough place to ship to, and he's had a bit of racing. I'd be surprised if he won this race, although the horse obviously is in great form. So I'm going to kind of narrow it to the two O'Neills, the Baffert, the Cruel Jack, and the Blacker. So half the field.
Well, that's your super. I mean, you've got it's nine horses. It's a nice nine horse field.
Right. Right.
And you know,
as I said, Straight No Chaser to me it would be my key. If he comes out looking none the worse for wear and it's a decent price, there could be some value there because people are going to look at the last race and not really fully appreciate he was annihilated. It was just an X. Just toss it.
You know, and you mentioned the line. We'll have that later today from Jeff Siegel. Happy Jack feels like the potential overlay.
Could very well be. He's a tough toss. He's all he's done is improve. Doug seems to have found his number, and he's running faster and faster and faster. So that would be a very tough toss in the trifecta. He should hit the board.
He's also versatile. He can lay, you know, as he's matured, he has shown more speed. In fact, that triple bend win, it's the first time he's ever done that, which is a sprint win. Otherwise, he's come from back further. So if they run away from him early, Maldonado can, you know, settle and come with a run. If nobody is hyper-aggressive and Straight No Chaser to some extent is really right. He's the leader type. If you were going to identify the pace scenario, he's the one that seems to need the lead. Everybody else is kind of a, you know, vanguard stalk up close type. So Maldonado has got he's going to have options, and he got to know him in that triple bend win, and Happy Jack, you would think he's no better than 4-1, 9-2 range.
Interesting,
right?
It's always a tough call for me. You know, Saturday's at Del Mar. I'm looking for value all the time. The public does some very, very strange things up. That's one thing I love about Barry Mitchell wagering.
We'll see what Siegel does. Although I will say this. The two triple digit buyers probably make. Nah, he's going to be lower. They're going to make him. He'll make him the second choice.
Yeah.
He'll be.
You know, another thing to echo the opening comments. Let's pay attention. Beginning today, how the track plays today and tomorrow, and early Saturday. Let's not assume that it's going to continue with that speed favoring bias we saw opening weekend. It may, but I want to confirm that before making any presumptions.
Crafty JF, everybody, Crafty Jeff Franklin. Jeff, I appreciate it. Glad to get you back on board and rolling. And of course, next week we will talk ahead of Whitney weekend.
Going to love that. Take care till then.
Jeff Franklin. And, of course, all you got to do is go to thoroughgraph.com, sign up, and you'll get the two races a week at the very least. Some weeks we've done three. I have not settled on a Beat Bic race yet. Maybe we'll do the Jim Dandy. Maybe I'll put a poll out. See what everybody wants to do. All right. Jim Gagliano is going to join us. And as mentioned with Pat Cummings, we're on the cusp of, you know, the main portion of the Saratoga season. And when we reference the sale and the Whitney and part of that meat of the meat is the Jockey Club Roundtable every year. And Jim Gagliano joins us. Jim, good morning.
Hey, Steve, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. I'm sorry we weren't at Haskell on Saturday.
Yeah, that's supposed to be one of your regular stops. We had a lot of fun.
It's the greatest. And I always we frequently talk in the wake of Haskell, and you know, Hammer came into town, and recount the Young Lions when you guys were all in your 20s working at Monmouth.
It was quite a crew. We had Jimmy Ventura, we had Hammerly. The racing office was full of guys that went on to you know, bigger and better things. Lou Raffetto was there. Sean Greeley, Chris Dragone was in that crew.
Yeah.
I'm forgetting some names, I'm sure. All working for Hal Handel and Bobby Colina. It was a lot of fun. Learned a lot, too.
Wow. It's just such a
and Sal
magical
Slaughter.
Place. Yeah. Sal, there you go.
Can't forget Sal.
Can't leave out Sal. It's just such a magical environment. Part of it, of course, is the resort nature of the Jersey Shore, and you know, then all the people, the generations that have worked there. It's always great.
Yeah, my dad worked there. I worked there. My brother worked there.
Wow.
My wife's whole family, one of whom is. Her brother still is a vet there, and my nieces have worked there, so it's definitely a generational thing.
that's unbelievable. I didn't realize it was that extensive, the list. That's amazing.
Oh gosh, yeah, it's a great place. I'm so happy to see Dennis Drazen and the Horsemen have kept it going to the way that they have, and it's got a bright future. I was really excited to see some of the things, the changes they've made. They continue to improve the place, and it had the best crowd they've had there since American Pharoah raced in the Haskell, which is quite a testament.
I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that they had a terrific business day as well. And you know, it's a constant, it's a battle. I mean, they've got to continue to be, you know, inventive and you know, to bring as many different tools to horse players to track their interest, and it's you know, they're throwing the kitchen sink at it. I mean, they work so hard to make the product as attractive as possible, and you know, then there's the, you know, the work of people like Brian Skirka and the great contest scene, and you know, there's a lot that goes into it, and the dedication there is you know, amazing to me.
You know, it was really neat. If you notice, the Haskell was now sponsored by Naira Bets.
Yes.
And when I worked there years ago, we viewed Naira as the great competitor. Credit to Dennis and credit to Dave O'Rourke for realizing it's kind of the same market. How can we work together? Good example of things that we need to do throughout the whole country. Figure out how we can, you know, stretch our assets and work together best to grow the game.
Well, and that's a perfect segue into the visit and into the roundtable, and you know, the kind of the first missive to, you know, let people know what to expect and the topics that'll be broached, and what are we looking forward to, Jim?
Well, it's we've been doing the roundtable since I went and looked this morning, since 1953. It's it's always been considered you know, an important meeting where we can bring people together. In the past, you know, before the internet, before television, before video, it was a way to share some thoughts and get some input from different corners of the sport. Now we broadcast it, we live stream it. We have multiple ways that you can consume it besides being here in Saratoga Springs. This year, it's 10 a.m. This coming Thursday, August 1st. Got a solid group of speakers. I'll open up the conference and talk a little bit about what the Jockey Club's been doing the last couple of years, and some exciting things that we're going to announce that I think people in our sport will appreciate. But I'll save that to debut those next week. We've got Megan Rogers of the NTRA, a rising star that Tom Rooney brought over. She's going to talk about the advertising campaign that they, through Chip Tuttle's firm, worked on last spring, and I think it did a wonderful job of working with the racetracks and getting the message out there that safety comes first. And she's going to go into some of the components of that campaign. I don't think this is your father's NTRA. I think this is a lot more effective group, and it's got virtually the entire sport represented on its board now. So everybody's pulling the oars in the right direction, and she's going to talk about the campaign. Joe Asher, who's known to some of you, he was most recently, he worked for IGT, but he was kind of the father of sports betting in America. If Dennis Strazen Dennis was the father, and I would say Joe Asher was a close cousin. He worked for William Hill, but Joe's a really interesting guy who's got a great perspective on horse racing, which is where he started in his career in very, very humble way, where he's become a top executive in sports betting. And he's going to talk about the opportunity that still sits there for our sport to take advantage of the tremendous promotional and marketing presence that sports betting has taken in America and how we can leverage that to grow our business. And then we're going to have a pod where, you know, as I mentioned, the roundtable has always been a New York thing. We do it up at Saratoga almost every year. The first year was actually here in New York City. It's actually in the building I'm standing at, 250 Park Avenue. But it has become a Saratoga event for many, many, many years. And we often heard from our friends in California saying, hey, what about us? How can our topics of interest be brought forward? So this year, live from Del Mar will be Gary Fenton, chairman of the Thoroughbred Owners of California. And he's going to talk, he's going to give some context on the importance of California racing to our national business. I won't steal his thunder. He's got a great presentation. He's going to talk about where it sits today, how important it is to the ecosystem of horse ownership, of handle, of developing new fans and new owners. And he's going to obviously talk about some of the challenges and hopefully some of the opportunities. And then as part of that California pod, we've got Dion Benson of First Racing, who's going to talk about some of the pretty historic changes that they've made to make California racing the safest in the country. And they've invested tremendously in some technology that hasn't been shown before. And I'm looking forward to her sharing with our audience technology that I think is going to make it a lot easier for regulatory veterinarians, other regulators, and people in the sport to identify horses that probably need a little bit more scrutiny. And then our keynote will be Todd Gralla of Populous. And I'm kind of a nerd on racetrack design and public assembly design. Todd's firm Populous does projects around the world. He had it was supposed to be a presentation with a partner, but the partner will have to stay in Paris during the Olympics because they designed the show jumping facility that will actually be at Versailles. The Olympics start tonight. I can't wait to watch some of these events. Swimming in the Seine and show jumping at Versailles sounds pretty cool. But they have great experience in modernizing facilities, rebuilding facilities, and they've done most of the major projects in America, which they'll talk about, and then they'll talk about and give, thanks to Mark Holliday and Dave O'Rourke and Naira, they'll give the first real look at the new exciting plans for Belmont Park. So we're pretty pumped about it. We think it's going to be a good conference, and we look forward to having many of you attend in person. If you'd like to attend, just drop me a note, jgagliano@jockeyclub.com, and we'll make sure we've got room for you. And if you can watch online, we'd love to have you online as well.
Well, and everything accessible through jockeyclub.com. Jim, a couple of follow-ups on the topics, and it's a terrific agenda. And, of course, starting with Gary, and we, you know, we check in with Gary Fenton regularly, most recently at OBS March. And you know, much like they talk in pro sports that, you know, a healthy Celtics, a healthy L.A. Dodgers, you know, healthy, you know, landmark franchises are instrumental for sports leagues success. California racing has to be stabilized, and it has to continue and thrive for the good of the industry collectively. So that topic is absolutely top of mind going into the roundtable.
Yeah, I agree. It has to be. You know, you look at the major league sports, there's, as you mentioned, there's, you know, there's big market teams and small market teams, and it all works because they work together. And you know, the Celtics or the Knicks may be the big market, and the Thunder's the smaller one, but the Thunder's hugely important to Oklahoma City and to the growth of basketball, you know, across the country. So we have the same kind of dilemma.
Hey, on that topic, let me slip in a past roundtable question. Because Jockey Club had floated the idea of helping struggling markets and you know, stepping in some cases. What, you know, what follow-up? I mean, there hasn't been anything publicly discussed, but I am curious. Is there anything behind the scenes that, you know, that Jockey Club envisions as, you know, as potential interventions to help shore up, you know, problem areas? And I suppose that could include California.
Our interests are always there. Look, these can be big, expensive projects, and you know, certainly done with partners is the best way to consider them. But we kind of lifted the initial idea from what they've done in the UK, where the Jockey Club
yes.
stepped in and took over some floundering or frustrated operations and kept them going. So we've definitely had discussions with multiple locations over the years, said, you know, how can we help? Nothing has come to any kind of conclusion, but it's still important to us as important racing centers in places like, you know, Chicago. You know, you just wince when you think that you don't have quite the presence in important American cities like that you used to have. So just like our interest in California through the roundtable. So we'll keep an eye on it. I don't have anything to report, but it isn't a dead idea by any means.
Well, and of course, you know, the San Francisco area losing Golden Gate Fields and the up in the air nature of CARF, of the, you know, California Association of Racing Fairs, and whether, you know, Pleasanton and the like are going to be able to do enough to sustain a Northern Cal circuit. Then, you know, Gary very frankly addressed issues, you know, regarding, you know, the TOC and frankly First Racing, explaining that, you know, the signal monies would be not just invaluable but necessary to sustain Southern Cal's program. So there's some serious issues, and Fenton's presentation will be, I think, is going to be very closely watched. Of course, Dr. Benson can tell a very happy story regarding the safety record and you know, a lot of the pre-race exam success and you know, the diagnostic success, Jim, that you know, it continues to burgeon, you know, really not just in California but all over the industry.
Yeah, I agree. I think that but the work they've done there, you know, I remember how dire it was in 2019 and the media calls. We did a little research on it. It was as bad as it gets. And credit to Belinda Stronach and Josh Rubenstein and the leadership of and management of both those organizations and throughout the whole state, not just those two. They and the horsemen, it was a sea change, and they deserve a lot of credit.
I'm excited about the Populous presentation, and of course, in addition to what they're doing at Belmont, they will be responsible as well to work with the Maryland Stadium Authority and the Horsemen at Maryland to build a new Pimlico. So, you know, the litany of construction, Leopardstown and Longchamp and Ascot. I mean, the record is, and you know, the edifices, Jim, are you know, have been just hailed by racegoers internationally. So that should be a lot of fun and a first peeling back of the curtain to see what the actual Belmont is going to look like.
Yes, I agree, and Churchill Downs as well.
That's right.
You know, if you think about Belmont, we loved it. I loved the building. It had great memories. It was just so enormous and so impressive, but it was so outdated. And you know, I remember there were only a couple of viewing standpoints from the building where you could actually see the paddock. That's where they put the offices.
True. Yep.
And yeah, I'm looking forward to the new design. It's going to be lighter on the property. It's going to have more green space. It's going to have the ability for, let's face it, you're at the races, you could be there 6.5 hours. So the idea that you're just sitting in one chair all day doesn't make sense anymore. So it's got, I believe it's going to have a lot more flow to it. You're going to have the ability to easily see the horses in the paddock, which is one of the greatest paddocks in the world. And then you can watch the race. And the work that they've done on the infield already with the four courses, if you haven't been there, it's you have to see it to believe it. The amount of earth moving and tunnels and engineering, I mean, it's to me, it's almost bigger than watching an airport built. It's amazing. And it's going to be amazing to our, you know, to fans when it's open.
Well, plus it'll give us a chance to have a Breeders' Cup again in New York. You know, it's going on 20 years without. So that, you know, having a building with heat, that'll make a difference.
And restrooms that flush.
Well, right, and well,
they struggled with.
And you know, the interfacing with the UBS and you know, the fact that it's going to be, you know, frankly, you know, having one downstate facility and being the focus, you know, then there's, you know, what I know that not everybody's in love with the idea of racing the winter on the synthetic surface, but you know, there's a lot of things that make sense. David O'Rourke has been, you know, a real proponent, and is not going to be dissuaded of advancing that, you know, that cause, and you know, the idea, you know, the idea that has taken root, Jim, more than anything, is that the horse is going to come first no matter what. That
yes,
there's not, you know, there's not going to be well, part of the game, and none of that is going to be trotted out anymore. It's and I think that has settled in the, you know, that reality across all stakeholder levels and horse player levels. The horse players, I think, have really come to understand and are going to be accepting of it if the sport's going to survive and have a future.
Yeah, I agree. And I mentioned green space. It's you'll have access to that big infield. I think there's public access, or there'll be access made available of over 30 acres.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's Long Island. It's there's not a lot of green space. So events and things that can get youth involved in the sport at the, you know, in the right kind of situation, all those things are, and the backyard, you mentioned UBS, the way it abuts UBS, it's a smaller building, so there's going to be more room back there. I was talking to David O'Rourke this week, and he's excited about that opportunity.
Jim, also, we should, there's one topic that I imagine is going to work its way into your opening remarks, a HISA update, and you know, where things stand. HBPA is conducting their convention at Prairie Meadows this week. Are you or Stuart going to touch on current update?
We've had HISA on the agenda the last few years.
Right.
We think they've done a good job of you know, with their, you know, regular updates to the industry. Lisa has been tireless in going around and meeting folks. So we decided not to have anything specific
All right.
For HISA at this meeting. We think that's a topic that they've well covered. Certainly, we support HISA. I remain incredibly impressed by the organization's ability to adapt. You know, were they always going to get everything right? No way. Were they going to be professional and listen and come up with, you know, what I'd say common sense solutions? Yeah, I have great confidence they will. But, you know, they're their own organization. We want to give them their space, and frankly, that's their charter.
If you, as part of the preview for next week's Jockey Club Roundtable, if you had to identify one achievement in the past calendar year that the Jockey Club is most pleased with, what would it be?
That's a good question. We started on a path a number of years ago. When I started, we hired McKinsey to develop a strategic plan for us. We've stuck to it. You know, we've had some deviations, but we've stuck to the idea of America's Best Racing being a national marketing arm and using efficient, modern digital marketing tools. We've stuck to continuing to invest in racing on television. You know, I'm proud of those. I always worried that one of the things our sport does a wonderful job of is launching something and then just kind of letting it die. We need to give it sustained support. So those are a couple of big ones. The heart and soul of the Jockey Club is what we do with data and how we can make it valuable for the sport and valuable for everybody. So I'm going to spend a little time talking about some new initiatives we have in our commercial companies and how we think that they're going to benefit the communities. And again, everything we make goes right back into the sport, which we've done consistently for, you know, for the last dozen years. So I think those are kind of the three big things. You probably have heard from Hammer a few times talking about the ratings.
Yes.
Idea. We're prepared to support a pilot, and we've worked with Hammer and a number of racing secretaries and some other important people in the sport to get this thing to where I think we can begin a pilot at the beginning of the next year. So that's a little preview of a few things that I'll discuss at the top of the roundtable agenda.
Very nice. And, you know, you referenced the data. The one thing that has not gotten, I think, enough attention is some of the kind of opening up the open source opportunity for that's been, you know, that had been called for quite a bit.
Yep. And we'll talk about some more. I mean, when you look at the future, I mean, what's the stock market's being driven by innovations in the area of artificial intelligence, and we've got to figure out, or we had to figure out, how to make those innovations available using our data. And it's a different model than the old models. So one of the things I'll also talk about is how we've adjusted and made it more convenient for people that have an AI tool to use our database and then ultimately develop really cool tools that can help industry professionals and handicappers.
Very nice. Jim, as always, I appreciate the Q&A and getting everybody set up for next week. And we'll see you here.
I'll see you in Saratoga.
You got it.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Thanks so much for this today and everything you do.
Not at all. Jim Gagliano, everybody. The Jockey Club. JockeyClub.com. And you can watch the roundtable next week. I'm sure we'll do more about it. That's a nice lineup. We flew through these 3 hours thanks to Jim, and earlier John Ross out in Iowa, and Pat Cummings, Tom Law as well, right? And we are going to fix the multi-race plays. Jeff Franklin too, of course, from ThoroughGraph. I'll make the adjustments on the post scratch. My race for the DePaula Play got tore up. Two horses came out and part of the entry. So that hurt a little bit. It's now a 6-horse field, so the price is going to be shattered. Ugh. All right, so be it. Good luck, everybody. Weekend preview at the races tomorrow. Twin Spires preview. And I think live from the track. All right? Good luck. Talk to you in the morning.
Two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 21-